Big shout out to everyone on Celtic Underground for all the support, for helping us get the 9 in a row. Hope you enjoyed the day, lads. Thanks very much.
So this is going to be really odd. On the night that we secure 9 in a row, I'm recording the top 10 for season 2017-18. Well, as we explained the podcast, it's pretty simple. We got the votes in, we asked everyone to vote. Work commitments were such that never actually got round to recording the podcast for that top 10. So, because we've got the 9, can't have missing seasons. Obviously, I need to create a top 10 of the 10 in a row when we get there. So, I'm joined by Anthony Murray and Duncan Smiley to review the top 10 of season 2017-18. But of course, we cannot do that on the night we secure the 9 without, first of all, having a bit of a laugh and a chat about getting 9 in a row. So this is me, Harry Brady, with Anthony and Duncan. Oh, and that was the real Neil Lennon.
We could have flipped the cookies 2 years ago, we could have said at the end of it, and you know what, come 2020, something's going to go wrong, the Huns are going to try and plant a virus to stop us getting...
So we are ready to go on the podcast. You guys had a good summer in 2018, yep. No, so this is the 2017-2018 Celtic Underground Top 10. However, the votes were collated at the time, but the podcast was never done. So I am joined by Duncan and Anthony on the nights that Celtic actually secure 9 in a row. So, talking about the top 10 of season 2017-18, welcome tonight. But first and foremost, guys, how's it feel to be 9 in a row champions? Anthony, how are you feeling?
I spent all day binging 2017-18 videos. You know, I've been distracted. You know, I haven't celebrated this in the slightest.
I sent a text to Duncan at 2 minutes, because we're recording this at 9 o'clock. I sent a text to Duncan at 2 minutes to nine saying, I hope you've done your homework, because I have done fuck all.
All right, then. I'm ahead of the game, then, because I genuinely put in the hours today. I say hours, plural. That's generous. I did put in some effort and then spent the rest of the afternoon drinking.
So. Was there fireworks? Was there many celebrations in Slovakia, in Bratislava?
You'd be surprised, because there's a gang of boys that I taught, right? And they graduated last year, and they all went to Scottish universities, whether it be Dundee, Edinburgh or Glasgow. And they've all fallen in with Tim's, as you would in an educated environment, having been brainwashed by me. So... Slovakia has kind of relaxed its, you know, mask on, you know, quarantine policy. So today I thought, last year when one of them graduated, he gave me a bottle of, you know, sort of Slovak champagne or whatever. You know, I'm not pretending that it was anything particularly spectacular. But when he gave me it, I said, that's my 9 in a row bottle. That's my 9 in a row bottle. So as soon as it was announced this morning, I fired a message to these boys. I was like, if you they've all been sent home from their unis, they're all in Slovakia. If you want some, you know, bubbly, join me. And I've basically been drinking for the last 6 hours with these boys. So there you go.
So, Duncan, how have you been enjoying? Were you doing your homework and completely missed out on the fact Celtic had won 9 in a row?
No, I've made a whole career out of winging it, and thank God for Wikipedia. But no, I've had a rather pleasant afternoon. My face is already sore with the smiling that I've done, and just relieved. We all knew it was coming, but just such a relief to get it done, and just to get it out of the way, to get 9, to get the number on the board, and also, and God willing, we'll all be a different place this year, and by that I mean virus wise, not title wise. But I'm glad it wasn't the 10, but no, it's just nice to get it. And I didn't think that I'd be that excited about actually hearing it and the white smoke coming out the chimney. And I guess there's always an insecurity there that somebody's going to do something and take it away. It's like walking around with a winning lottery ticket in your pocket, but not quite sure when it's going to get drawn and that you might lose a ticket. So no, it was a sense of relief and joy. And yeah, it's great. It's great. And I don't think that it's a... obviously, I don't think it's a tainted title. Anybody that says that has got an agenda or is stupid or both. It's been a fantastic season. And I think when we... And I did do a wee bit of searching back to the 17-18 season. And when you actually stack it, when you look at where we finished this season with 8 games to go compared to that season, it shows you how good a season this one has been. And I'm just a wee bit disappointed that we didn't get a chance to go and absolutely romp it by 20 plus points.
Do you know that is the only thing? I think we would have romped the season by 20 points. If you finished the form guide on the way that it was going, what is it? I need to continue with the lack of preparation for this and get up the points per game situation.
Well, I mean, we're on, like, with 8 games to go, we're on 80 points and scored 89 goals. And the 17-18 season, we won with 82 points and only scored 73 goals. So we're only 2 points behind our tally for that season. And we had 8 games to go, but we're 16 goals more scored, which I think is phenomenal.
Hey, let me see if I can work this out. 2.666666666 times 38... is, so they were saying we would have finished on 101.33 points, and they're on 2.303 times 38. They would have finished on 87. So they're saying we'd have won the league by 14 points. That's a load of bollocks.
Bullshit.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way that we would have only gained an extra point on them between now and the end of the season, because we'd have beaten them at Celtic Park. Don't you think, Anthony? Right. Quickly before we start, how would the season have finished? What would have been the score at Ibrox when we play them?
What was the game?
Let's be the pools panel.
We were about to play them, was it?
Yeah.
We were about to play them at Ibrox.
We were 2 days away from playing them. So pools panel, based on the form after Christmas, pools panel, Anthony, what's your score?
Odson Edwards was going to score 6 goals and it was going to be a comfortable 7-0 victory. Record breaking.
Excellent. Duncan, what's your pools panel?
In all seriousness, if you do take the pools
panel... I was being serious.
If you take the pools panel approach, there's no way that that's anything else other than an away win and a win for Celtic. I mean, Christ, we played 30 league games and we won 26 of them. It was only ever going to be an away win. Actually, and I'll make this easy for you, Harry, because I don't think that we drop a single point in the run-in. I don't. I mean, why would we?
Well, exactly.
I mean, we'd have given, like, Frimpong a run out up top or something. We'd have pissed him out in the latter weeks. Come on. Let's be serious.
But we'd have still won.
That's true. Yeah.
So already, just after the first game that the pools panel has sat for, Celtic are 16 points clear.
There you go.
And about 25 goals better off.
Exactly. Scientifically proven that we would have won the league. So yes.
I'm pretty much sure this is how the SPL board meeting went down.
What, you weren't there? I was there. I was shipping it all kinds of asides.
Were you? Did you sneak in? Did you hack their Zoom account?
They all need a colour commentator at all these events these days. That's why I'm there.
I can exclusively reveal that apparently Dave Cormack said something that went down like a fart in a spacesuit, and thereafter. The whole of the SPL, the top flight of the SPFL, apart from Rangers and Hibs. Rangers said nothing apart from Hibs as well. Everybody else was laying into Cormack from Aberdeen. So that's my exclusive insight into it. And then we are handed the title today, 9-0. I had a Twitter interaction. See if you can guess what happened, right? A Hun tweeted me after I just made some comment and said, tainted titles, right? Something about tainted titles. Guess how I replied to that. See if you can have a guess. Anybody?
Well, I'm assuming it's not the obvious answer would be, well, let's talk about tainted titles whilst you guys were cheating and all that. That would be the obvious.
Correct.
Answer.
So that's what I did do. So in the way that Celtic Rangers fans' interaction over this deteriorates, guess how he responded to that one?
Was it a reference to paedophilia?
Correct!
And Harry, I don't do Twitter. You know I'm not allowed Twitter. It's not 2024 yet, so I'm not allowed back on Twitter. I tell you what, they're nothing if not predictable.
I know! It's like, traded titles, well, what about the all the trophies you won? Paedophiles!
It's a bit like being in primary seven and somebody calls you something and you delve into everything you've got and you just go back and say, you are. No, you are. Never argue with a fool. Anybody watching doesn't know who's who. And it's hilarious. And that's what makes it almost a wee bit sweeter, watching them implode. They've got so much time in their hands, watching this all unfold publicly. It's made it all that a bit sweeter. It really has, watching their reaction to it. And I just, every time you think that they've hit rock bottom, they just keep digging and digging and digging. It's when there's nothing else to watch sport-wise, that's been a blessing over the past couple of months.
Also, all of this distraction has kept Stevie G in a job. Because nobody's turning around and going, wait a minute, we were level and a game in hand at Christmas. How did you manage to fuck that up in such a short number of games? Nobody's asking that question. So he's been kept in a job by this shit.
How the hell did we rack up a 13-point lead? Like, it's an absurd number. You know, if we were at a 7-point lead, we'd be like, all right, yeah, we deserve it and we're number one. If it was an 8, a 9, a 10, it's a 13-point lead. How the hell is that?
It's actually 14 when you lump on the 25 goals. Exactly. I mean, here's a question. Yes or no answers. I know. Sorry, Brian, I'm jumping and doing your job.
That's
here.
Right, yeah.
Do you think, assuming we start a football season next year, do you think Steven Gerrard will be their manager? Yes or no?
Yes, because I don't think he would. I think he would look shite if he walked away and they can't afford to sack him. It's a loveless marriage they're locked in. And they're both pretending for the sake of the kids that it works.
What do you think?
We asked the same conversation in the last podcast, and David said no. And I mean, I don't know my arse from my elbow, but for the sake of the Castori contract, let's say yes.
And I'm going to say no, but for the reason.
The only reason why I think it might, because Glasgow will be increasingly right. Seeming like a very far away place.
Yep.
When you're down there and all that. Well, stuff's going on up there. But anyway, more importantly, on to, do you know the other thing about, as we talked just before we came on, Danny Baker was the first person that I ever heard on talking like fans talk, when he said that the only thing better than a last minute winner against your closest rivals was when you get home you find out that your player was offside for it. And the rage was with me, and I was out briefly. Tonight I had to go and get, we ran out of milk, and I had to go and get some milk, and I was listening to Clyde on the radio. I'm justifying my COVID my COVID-19 gym trip out of the house in case anybody's listening. Oh, he was out of the house. A guy phoned up and made the point, which is also really riling them, because the only competition that technically, theoretically, they still, however minutely, had a chance of winning was the league, and that's been called. But the Scottish Cup, which they're not in, is still going to happen. It's no matter what. And obviously that's making their heads explode. How come the league's got to be called, but the Scottish Cup can just happen? And then the guy phoned in or texted in and said, it's not fair, because if the Scottish Cup I mean, he's got a point, to be fair, but it was just his anger. If the Scottish Cup's going to happen whenever it happens, and apparently it won't be until spectators can get in, so it might not be till like the new year, Hearts will be playing in the Championship with a smaller budget and an inferior team. So it's not fair that there'll be a weakened Hearts playing in the competition.
You can actually see the, you can hear through the ether straws actually being clutched. It really does.
Although the bonkers thing about it is, in all of this now with hindsight looking back, they've still got the second leg of the Europa League campaign to play.
Well, I was going to say, you said technically the only thing they could still win was the league. I think they got more chance of winning. They had more chance of winning the Europa League than they had of winning the Premier League.
And you know, the strange thing is, much as I was utterly peed off that we get knocked out by Copenhagen at the time, I would now actually be finding it a wee bit irritating that we still had the Copenhagen second round of the, or whoever we played after we'd beaten Copenhagen, we'd still have that round to play.
I know.
Because we would then be playing two European competitions at the same week. You know, you could find teams trying to simultaneously play qualifying for the Champions League while playing in the last eight of the Europa League.
I think that might get written off. I think they can afford to write that off. I mean, UEFA, I don't think they can afford to write off the Champions League, but they could afford to write off the Europa League, I think. Which technically will make Rangers joint winners.
They will.
They've got one and one 16 European trophies.
Two of the 54 league titles that they claim, they didn't finish top of the league. The one with Dumbarton. Is it Dumbarton?
The one with Dumbarton. I didn't realise it was two.
There's one with Dumbarton and one with, in the 50s. The one with the 50s, it's goal average, but if it was goal difference, they wouldn't have won it. But the one with Dumbarton, they don't even win it on goal average, and they claim it. And it was also like only an 18-game season or something like that as well.
Well, I had that on the same vein of your Twitter argument. I had that argument, or that discussion with a Rangers fan, and I forget what his first response, but his second one was, well, you just got to European Cup final on the toss of a coin. I think they get a wee ready reckoner at the beginning of the season. Excuses to give when you're called out on stuff. And they just go down a wee flow chart. Did he say yes to this? And then it's good. And then ultimately it's, well, well, you're all pedos. You got to love them.
Anyway, it's just, it's so primary five, isn't it? It's like, yeah. well, you're a pedo. You're a spanner.
It's like Kevin and Perry being a university challenge.
Anyway, this is supposed to be the Celtic Underground 2017-18 top 10. Very quickly, Anthony, are we going to win the quadruple? Are we going to win the Scottish Cup?
You'd hope so, yeah. It's intriguing what the squad will be when we play those matches or play that match or whatever. Yeah, you know, some will come, some will go. It'll be a kind of different thing, but it'll still be Celtic, and we'll still win it.
Right, okay. Let's go into teasing 2017-18. So, just to let everyone know, this is the season, and you can now tell that I'm reading straight off Wikipedia. Where the home colours were green and white hoops with white shorts. The second strip was the green and green hoops, and the third strip was the green with the black shorts. It was... we were continuing the invincible run, did we continue?
Yeah, we were continuing
the invincible run with under Brendan Rodgers. It was, we beat Motherwell in the League Cup final, we beat Motherwell in the Scottish Cup final, we beat Rosenborg in the final qualifier, or second final qualifier for the Champions League, then we beat Astana in the playoff round, and then our group stage of the Champions League was Paris Saint-Germain, Bayern Munich, Anderlecht, and ourselves. And we managed one win and got through and played Zenit St. Petersburg, had a good first round, and then get beat. The reason I'm doing this is because we've already done a season review. So that was the team. Top goal scorer that season, Yes, is that right? Top goal
scorer. Scott Sinclair.
Scott Sinclair with only 18 goals, is that right?
And the second was James Forrest with 17.
James Forrest with 17. The goals are pretty spread about, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, they were very spread about, because you're obviously got the same reference point as me for all this information. But yeah, I mean, and you'd like, even...
A top goal scorer with 18 and 126 goals scored all season, that's a phenomenal...
Sinclair get 18, and because Edward will only get 11, Dembele gets 16, Griffiths get 13. They were well spread about, those goals.
And appearances were Craig Gordon 26 was the top appearance of goalkeepers, because we had De Vries and Bain. Jack Hendry had 11, Simonovic had 15, Boyata 28, Lustig 26, Christopher Ayer 24, Kieran Tierney 32, Beaton 14, Patrick Roberts 12, Scott Brown 34. I'm not doing the total. I'm doing league appearances. Craig Gordon 45, De Vries 10. De Vries had 10 league games that season, 10 appearances in total that season. Scott Bain had 7, Simonovic 30, just key ones. Boyata 39, Lustig 47, Christopher Ayer 34, Beaton 23, Roberts 19, Scott Brown 56, Scott Sinclair 55, Stuart Armstrong 41, Johnny Hayes 20, Tom Roglic 42, Olivier Cham 47, Carl McGregor 55, James Forrest 58, Ebuwe Kwasi 12, Lee Griffiths 39, Moussa Dembele 39, and Odson Edbard 29. My memory was Dembele was in and out of the team a lot that season.
Well, everybody was. They only played 25 league games, as did Griffiths and Edward. They all played about the same amount of games. I think I did about 20 minutes ago, went online and just to refresh my memory on this. My biggest surprise of the stats from this season was Scott Sinclair. A, that he played 55 games. And he scored 18 goals. He was our top goal scorer.
Are we going to work our way through the players?
Yeah, so I'm going to start.
All right.
So we had loads of votes in from people listening to the podcast. I'm going to very quickly give some people's names to listen to the podcast, because I'm very rudely get the votes in and then don't mention people. So randomly, I'm going to pick some names of Matthew Mockin, Michael Kokoza, Andrew Johnson, Gavin McGoldrick, Stephen Owen, Peter Smith, Stephen Craig, Alan Reid, Kyle Forrest, Red Moon, Stevie Walls, Paul McMullen, Angus Gibson, Owen O'Donnell, and I can't be bothered reading any. So there you go. There's a group of the selection of some of the people who voted. So thanks everybody who voted. We had loads of votes in, and the top 10 came out. First of all, in 10th place, Moussa Dembele. So Anthony, start off his second season at Celtic, Brendan Rodgers' second season, the second treble winning season. Moussa Dembele.
It's really odd. It's really, really odd, because I didn't read anything prior to this review, but I did watch back an entire sort of season review worth of goals.
Yep.
And obviously we're far away from when this all happened, and we're also, you know, hindsight 2020, yada yada yada. But it's really weird to watch Dembele back from this point of view, because I am a fan who gets frustrated and annoyed with guys that don't contribute. And a lot of the time, my measure of contribution is turning up and being available. And I've looked into the past of what Dembele's appearance, you know, ratio was. And over Dembele's career, I think he bats about 65%, which means he misses 35% of games, which for me is irritating and frustrating. And when you watch back his season, this season, it's obvious, because not only have you got a guy that's missing a lot of games, but when he comes back into the team, you know, it's that whole, all right, he needs to, you know, run, get up to speed, blah blah blah. So it's, when does he contribute? When are you giving him a pass for not doing anything? And it's really weird to think that in the second season of Moussa Dembele, who has now become a sort of cult legend throughout the Celtic support. And I'm really intrigued what I voted for. Yeah, I don't know what my votes were for this, you know, this thing. But to see him scraping into the top 10 is really odd. This should be peak Dembele from how we remember it. But he's scraping in at the 10th place. But then when you look back at his contribution, you know, it's big time. You know, it is big time. It's a cup semi-final, a brace against the Hibs, a cup final goal against Motherwell, although I think it's a penalty. Against the Huns, he scores at Ibrox. And we mentioned this at the time in the season review. Actually, we didn't mention it. That was the hilarity of how good this season was. Nobody mentioned that Moussa Dembélé dinked a penalty against Rangers at Ibrox. It's like the best thing that ever happened, and nobody's ever spoke about it. And it's unbelievably brilliant that he stares that dickhead goalkeeper in the eye and puts him on his arse at the Celtic end at Ibrox in a cup semi-final, and just absolutely brilliant. And then he scores at Ibrox, and he's just, you know, he was class. And then the thing that I think, what I forget about it watching this video, there's a brilliant goal away at Tynecastle, admittedly probably when the league's all but mathematically locked up, where Rogic clips this wonder pass over to him and he brings it down like Bergkamp and slots it in the corner. It's one of the great Celtic goals of the last 10 years, maybe of all time. And it's just a footnote in Dembele's season here, which it just goes to show how good we were that season. Although the contribution was spread, those who contributed were all brilliant. And Dembele gets in there just, but he was brilliant.
I don't know about you, Duncan, but this top 10, as it continues, the point Anthony's just made about Dembele being 10th, I think a lot of this top 10 reflects how people performed in the first season under Brendan.
Yeah.
And how they didn't perform to the same level, and therefore people, as you say, Anthony, now that you're looking back again, what you're realising was maybe people were spoiled in the first season. So when somebody's maybe 60% of what they were in the first season, people are going, ah, well, he didn't do anything, because they're benchmarking it against something, as opposed to, but it was still pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is funny when you look back now, a couple of years on, and I agree with a lot of what Anthony said there, and I think the first thing that you appreciate when you look back now, I think Dembele was only 20 years old then, maybe 21. I think he's still only 22 or 23. He was a young man, and I think the season before that had been such an amazing season with the Invincibles and the Lisbon anniversary and all those things. But I think Dembele that season, I think Dembele would have scored a lot more goals in a Neil Lennon team than he did in a Brendan Rodgers team, because goals were spread about so much, as you've just demonstrated there by the spread of the goals, with Sinclair being top goal scorer and then James Forrest. I think he'd have got a lot more goals under, say, Neil Lennon than under that Brendan Rodgers team that season, which wasn't a prolific season for the team at all. I see, we only got 2 points more than we've already got with 8 games to go this season. But yeah, I mean, looking back, he was a scorer of big goals. But I think you fast forward now, you realise his quality. And he's actually got a better goals ratio at Lyon in a perceived better league than he had at Celtic. He was just under a goal every other game at Celtic, and he's just over a goal every other game at Lyon, having played about the same amount of games for Lyon as he did for Celtic. So I don't think anybody disputes his quality, but that season he was a bit meh. I thought he was going to be the man. I'd have, at the beginning of the season, you could say who's going to be the top player in the number 10.
I thought
you then nailed him on.
I thought at the time, and I think even more so now, that it is a great first season, and then was already in the mindset that he was leaving. And so, getting back to the point you just made, Anthony, and you too, Duncan, I got the impression at the time, now more so with hindsight, that he just decided to only turn up for the big games. in his second season.
Aye.
You know, it's no. almost like, I can do this whenever I want. Yeah. And his Twitter behaviour since has made me think he loathes the Huns.
that's been brilliant. I hadn't realised that. I don't know if he hated him when he was here. He certainly hates him now. He's been a riot.
He has.
Absolutely brilliant. He absolutely baiting him the whole summer.
So that's Moussa Dembele came in at number 10 in the collection of people's votes, because it was odd. Quite a few people, you know, I try to, what I do, I get all the votes in and I allocate like 10 points for whoever came first in everybody's list down to 1 point for whoever came last in people's lists. So it actually, Dembele had a lot of eighth places in people's lists, but there was also a sizable number of people who didn't vote for him at all. And that's why he ended up 10th. So if you were doing it on average of where people put him, it would have been probably 8th place, but if you put him based on the point system. So for one of the few times in our We Buy Players to Sell Them trading strategy, we actually seem to have succession planning in the Dembele transfer situation, in that we signed Edouard, and this was the season that Edouard was starting to... that we brought Edouard in. He was coming through, so Edouard came 9th. Duncan, so do you want to kick off on Eddie, French Eddie?
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree with you. And Eddie, for me, he always looked, and going back, he's not the player, he wasn't the player then that he is now, given the goals that he's rattled in, again, but he's 2 years older. But he looked good, and he looked better playing with Dembele and just playing off Dembele. In that season, he struggles a wee bit as a lone striker that Rodgers wanted to play a lot. But no, he looked a bit. He had a lot of the similar traits to Dembele. I think they're not that much difference in their age. Physically, they're very similar. And I think that, again, maybe this season he wasn't putting in the shift that he puts in this season. But no, you couldn't fault him. Again, a goal every other game in that season isn't a bad ratio. For somebody like that in the league. So, but again, he's probably where he should be at that season, down towards the bottom, because like I say, he's a striker and it's not a huge amount of goals to score, but he had a good season, and he's obviously going on to be a much better player. I'd argue he's a better player now than Dembele was when Dembele left us, that's for sure.
Anthony, you're the one that's done the most research for this podcast today, so Odson Edouard.
It's that weird, strange thing about hindsight that I remember when we splashed the cash to sign him, you know, permanently, I was firmly in the, yeah, good, yeah. So obviously he'd done enough by the end of the season for me to be fully on board.
Yeah.
The Edouard fan club. But it did take time. You know, he came in, he didn't, you know, he wasn't like a George Cadet who... Well, he did score in his debut, but you get my point. It wasn't instant he's the guy that's going to score a million goals.
Oh, I remember getting quite a few texts from people saying, why are we playing Edouard today in games during that season?
Yeah. And one of the strange things watching the highlights is that there's so many teams that come to Celtic Park wearing some shit generic away strip that I've no idea who they are. They could be St Mirren, they could be Partick, they could be Ross County, they could be Inverness. I have no idea who they are. It could be Harps. They're just somewhere on some crap non-navy blue away strip that I don't know who they are. But I think he rattles in a hat-trick against someone, and that's obviously impressive. And then he scores that wonder goal against the Harps. And it's one of the few games where Dembele and Cham and Edouard all play together, and we go out after Christmas and just shellac Hearts at Celtic Park, and he scores one of the best goals where he takes it in the inside left, gets on his left foot, where you're thinking, all right, he's on his weaker foot, what's he going to do? Oh, he smashed it in the top corner off the bar. Absolute beauty. This guy's George Weah. I love this guy. And then again, he kind of falls in and out of the team, and you know, nobody really knows, is he the real deal or is he not? And then away at Ibrox, he comes off the bench, scores an absolute, you know, brilliant goal to basically win the title. And then it's, you know, he is who he is from that point. And then at the end of the season, he chips in with two more in a 5-0 game that, in hindsight, should have been a 10-0 game. You know, we should have stamped our heel on a Rangers' throat that day and really made history. But we didn't. But, you know, c'est la vie. He scores two against the Rangers, brilliant goals in a wonderful afternoon. And, yeah, he's there on merit above Dembele. And fortunately, he's hung around for a little bit longer.
Do you know the one you talk about at Ibrox,
yeah,
where he scores the third goal? Was that the one where we went down to 10
yeah.
men?
Yeah.
And Brendan Rodgers did something which I always thought was really... And every time we went down to 10 men under Brendan Rodgers, his substitution was to bring another forward on. And it's the first time I'd ever really seen a manager who his strategy was, we've gone down to 10 men, so I'm going to... That normally means you sit in and defend. I'm actually going to make... Your players will then have trained, if they do any training exercises, they're playing against 10 men, it'll be against a camped-in team. And suddenly, we do the opposite. And I always remember that day when Edward came, and I was in the Broomloan stand, and standing there, and he comes along, and the guy next to me just says, he's going to cut inside and shoot. And he cuts inside and shoots. I was like, oh man, you just got this perfect. So that's two of our strikers in the bottom two. Eighth place, Dedrick Boyata. So Anthony, Dedrick Boyata, take it away.
In terms of goals, he chips in a couple. He scores a header in the cup. He scores against Hearts. I'm assuming at home by my notes, because he then scores. The same game where Edward scored the lovely goal against Hearts, he finds himself through on one and slots it, and then he scores against Hearts away in the same game that Dembele scored the wonderful goal that I mentioned earlier. I'm really intrigued what my vote was. I'll never know it. I don't know. I checked in my outgoing emails to you this afternoon, trying to figure out why is Bayat here? I was never Bayat's biggest fan. Never convinced he really wanted to be there. Never convinced he was that good, to be honest. But ultimately accept that, relatively speaking, he could put in a shift in an SPL game, SPFL game, and he scored some goals and we won a league comfortably. But he's there. I don't think that's me being revisionist to suggest that I was never his biggest fan. I don't know why he's there, but he is.
Duncan, do you know why he's there?
I think I liked Boyata. You put aside, he tainted his sort of legacy with his whole shenanigans over no wanting to play in the Champions League qualifiers and trying to get his move, and it was all a bit embarrassing, all a very bit public for me. But I thought Boyata was a good centre half, and like many centre halves, he's got a good partner with him, he's even better. But I like Boyata, and I'm not, again, looking, I wasn't surprised that he's in the top 10, because I think he's a reliable player. He's very athletic, you know, a wee bit of pace about him, and he would grab the odd goal. I liked him, albeit you tend to think because he chucked it, basically. He chucked it and he went downhill. But for that season alone, he was a pretty mainstay. And I think he was a good buy for us. I'm not sure what he's going on to do now. I think he's maybe got a bad injury. But that season...
Oh, he was in the news across the whole world at the weekend.
Was he?
Aye. Because he kissed another player as a goal celebration.
Was it?
Aye.
All right, there you go. But that season, yeah, for me, a good, solid centre-half, when at a time we were really, really struggling for centre-half. So, I know, worth his place in the top 10 for me, which might not be a popular view.
To go back to a previous podcast when we reviewed the whole season, I remember on the back of the previous season, hoping that, you know, Seminovic and Bayata were going to kick on and be, you know, world beaters, basically.
Yeah.
And even, I'm pretty sure at this stage, at the end of the 2017-18 season, I had doubts as to whether they both of them had kicked on. And the fact that Samirovic is obviously not, spoiler alert, Samirovic is not on this list. But yeah, it is, neither of them really kicked on to the level that we hoped they would.
Samirovic, actually, to talk about a player not on the list, Samirovic has been an odd one. He's sort of, I mean, I know his injuries, a couple of injuries have obviously had an impact, but he sort of went up to a peak, came down to about 70% of that peak, and then has plateaued at that level ever since. He's an odd one. Anyway, we'll move on from 8th place Boyata to 7th place Tom Rogic. Anthony, take it away on Australian Tom.
This is a really strange one, and it's a hard one to reflect on, you know, with hindsight. Because, I mean, I absolutely love Thomas Rogic. And if you were to ask me when did the decline start, if you'd asked me before this, I wouldn't have known. When did he stop scoring goals? When did he stop contributing, you know, as much as I demand of a Celtic player? And I'm really not sure. It's certainly not before the end of this season. Because you look back at this one, obviously the standouts, you know, from day one he scores against Linfield. He chips in goals along the way. And then ultimately, my notes say, Ibrox, Huns Hamden, 5-0 Huns. So he's just scored against
the Huns. Were you taking beers when you were writing these notes?
No, that was long before. That's just my shorthand. I'm actually disgusted with myself. Since 2012, I've only referred to them as zombies. So the fact that I've referred to them as Huns suggests that I dropped the ball here. But yeah, he scores at Ibrox twice in two wins. He scores at Hampden in a cup semi-final. And then in the aforementioned 5-0 game, he scores. It's a strange goal because it was that one where you thought, oh, it's a penalty. And then it just rolls over to him and he sticks in the top corner. And I still, to me, I kind of forget it as a real goal, as if, oh, well, I could have scored that one. You know, it was an empty net. You know, it should have been a penalty. But ultimately, Rogic has chipped in with 4 goals against the Huns in one season. And to, you know, the icing on the cake, the wonderful Dembele goal I mentioned earlier at Tynecastle, it's Rogic that hits the outside of the foot pass. You know, the absolute Mravchik-esque bit of poetry that just tells us how brilliant Rogic is or was at this point, and absolutely brilliant. And it's weird to look at his clutch moments are so brilliant. How's he only in seventh? But I guess you have to fill in the gaps. It was an argument I had with people on Twitter this week about Alan Thompson. If you judge people by their YouTube videos, you adore people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But there's gaps there. The story is untold by highlights. So the fact that Rogic is only at seventh, there's clearly some part of the narrative that I'm not detailing here, but absolutely wonderful. But ultimately, you know, there's a question mark there.
Duncan, Tom Rogic.
Yeah, I mean, I think that season, 17-18, that was the beginning of the end for Rogic. And I was just thinking about there, as Anthony's saying it, when it started going wrong. Pretty much the minute after lightning struck and he scored the goal that got us a treble at Hampden, an invincible season. It's all been downhill for Tom Rogic since then. He's not been the same player contributing the most, but he would be in my team of the season for that season. He's one of the classiest players I've seen at Celtic Park, but he's not got the engine. He's got the heart of a mouse. You wouldn't want him in the trenches or that, but he's a classy player and has scored some big goals for us. And in that season, I'll just look at his stats. We're talking 23 league games he's played and 8 goals. I think he would be most people's, and at the time, going back 2 years, nobody would be surprised if we were doing this back then to say that Tom Rogic was in the team. But he should be number one, two or three for me, the ability he's got, but he's just not got that engine and desire. And that's, for me, why I'll never play at a higher level than Celtic. But yeah, he would definitely be in my team then. And I like him. He's a very classy player, but very frustrating.
One of the challenges of asking people to vote for a player of the year is people tend to remember how the most recent 3 months, because that's when the trophies are won, and obviously it's the most recent game. So, you know, it's like people's memories of how good Patrick Roberts was. My memory of Patrick Roberts were he was a bit anonymous in the winter months, but he did well in the summer months. And so, and I do wonder, I'm trying to remember how Tom Rogic was, because if you look at it from February, we lost away to Kilmarnock, drew with St Johnstone, won against Aberdeen, won against Rangers, drew with Motherwell, beat Ross County, drew with Dundee, beat Hamilton, lost to Hibs, beat Rangers and Hearts, drew with Kilmarnock, lost to Aberdeen in league games. So I'm wondering if maybe he's lower down because he wasn't really, apart from maybe the Rangers game, he wasn't performing in those games.
There's something to be said
Okay, go on, Anthony.
There's something to be said for that. You know, I mean, obviously, a lot of the listeners here will be watching that Michael Jordan documentary. And American sport is full of, you know, the regular season, which is basically a complete waste of time. And then the playoffs. You know, and obviously football works differently because you've got a league campaign. But guys that turn up when it matters, they are the guys that contribute. I mean, if you look at statistically, Champions League football, for example, Arwen Robben is a guy that a lot of people write off as Arwen Robben. What the hell did he do? But Arwen Robben's like, you know, take out Messi and Ronaldo. Arwen Robben's like one of the greatest players in European football history because he turns up for the Champions League when it matters and made Bayern big time. Mm-hmm. And if you look at this season alone, what did Rogic do? Oh, he only scored 4 goals against the Rangers. So it's massive. It is massive.
Yeah. So, Tom Rogic, we'll move on now to Christopher Ayer. Is at number 6, Duncan? Are you surprised to see Christopher Ayer?
Well, I feel guilty saying this, but yes, I am. The only reason I love Christopher Ayer. For no other reason, and it should be key in any footballer, is he's got Disney Prince hair, and that's pretty impressive. But Chris Ayer, I think that's the season he went to Kilmarnock on loan. I don't think he played a full season for us.
No, if he's in the 10, he must be there.
I thought that he came back and I thought he was at Kilmarnock on loan for that season. So I assumed that he came back halfway through.
He played 34 games, with the exception. So Lustig played 47, Boyata played 39, Kieran Tierney played 55, and he played 34.
Okay, well, I'm talking shite then. To be fair, that's not breaking news. But no, I was surprised. And again, maybe back to what we were saying about Boyata, the quality and consistency, assuming he was playing centre-half, which he would have been.
Yeah.
The quality and consistency of our centre-half, we were juggling the likes of Boyata. No doubt Beaton had a run there. He played both at centre-half and he has in midfield. And Simonovic, and we even had Jack Henry in there. Again, spoiler alert, Jack's not in the top 5. So I think it was a case of, within reason, I played centre-half. I might have got a couple of games that season. But I'm surprised that he's in it, but
I think people are voting.
He'd be in every top 10 of mine since. I really like the boy. And again, he's probably 19 years old about then, I think.
I think sometimes people are voting on taking that 19 into account because there's 2 or 3 people who not only voted, they also put comments in. So I'm just reading one here. Did well to nail down a first 11 spot. Looks raw but full of potential. Somebody else gets better and better every game. Somebody else, much better than I was expecting. Somebody else, considering he's hardly played at centre-half, never put a foot wrong. So I think it's as much to do with, wow, he's better than I was expecting. What are your thoughts, Anthony?
My notes are based on goals scored YouTube video. And there's 2 players in the top 10 that we're discussing that I've literally written their name and written nothing else. So I have no additional notes on Ayer other than my memory, which was a satisfaction of a young midfielder defender coming into the team, holding down a place in a team that was doing well. There's times in Celtic's history where I think, I don't know if that's... is a measure of success to be playing well in a good team. You know, it's the argument I always have about when Chris Sutton played centre half for Celtic. Chris Sutton played centre half well for Celtic because we were the best team in the country, and playing sweeper in a team that's better than everyone else is a piece of piss. You know, which I can attest to, having played at an amateur level to some extent. So I'm not saying Ayer had no job to do, but he did his job well, and he came in and he played well. And for a young man, that's a success. And the hope that he can go on and develop, there's still question marks over him, you know, factoring in the seasons that come on. And even now, I don't think anyone is fully believing he's, you know, the next Franco Baresi. But he's got a lot of potential. And this was the first season where he came back from Kilmarnock, held down a place, and it gave us some hope for him, I guess. So, you know, fair play that he got the numbers, he got the performances that he did.
Yeah, and it's another good example of a loan move working. He went to Kilmarnock and he got a lot of appeal. He came back, and I'm a big, big fan, and I'm actually glad that he's in that team now, looking back.
So we're now in the top five, and in fifth place, Duncan, is Olivier and Cham. And to give you some context, a couple of comments that people put in: got better as the season went on. Somebody else: bossed the midfield in big games post-Christmas. Somebody else: found his feet. Top tip for next to be first next season. So, Duncan, yeah. Olivier and Cham.
Yeah, again, going back 2 years, I'm not surprised in the least that he's in the top 10 and that he's in the top five, because at that time, it was, for me, it was a first pick. If he was fit, I'd be having him in the team. I know in the same team that season, obviously you've got McGregor and Brown that are ever present, but I'm a big, big fan of Cham then. I am a wee bit disappointed that he's not developed into the player I thought he was going to be, but at that time, well worth his place in the top 10. Again, and we'll say that about Dembele, and we'll say that about Rogic, is that a big player in big games, and he could step up, and he was often a go-to guy for Rodgers in big games, either to start or to bring off the bench. So yeah, at that time, I was tipping him to be a player that we were going to sell for 25, 30 million. I thought he was the guy that would sell after Dembele left. He's been a wee bit disappointing, but at that time, yeah, a good solid player, and at that time looked like he wanted to build a career at Celtic and looked happy to be there. And I guess we didn't have players like Christie then at that time. So working around McGregor and Brown, again, he's got good partners in the midfield in that season, and maybe easy to look good with those two guys next to you, but not surprised he's in that season. And I think looking back, I certainly voted for him in my top 10 in that season.
Anthony?
Coming out of that season, I was a big fan. There's that early sprinkling where you're trying to work out, you know, what he's doing or what his role is in the team. He scores a couple of, like, I think, winners in like 1-0 games, mm-hmm. which is obviously a big deal. You know, if you score the only goal in a 1-0, that's a pretty big, that's 3 points. So he immediately contributes, although it's not, I don't think he was immediately obviously the best player on the team, although people could see the potential. I think the away game at Anderlecht was a big deal.
Yeah,
because all you want a Celtic player to do is express themselves and display their talents on the biggest stage, which is the Champions League. And I think maybe with Moscow aside, Anderlecht's probably Celtic's greatest away Champions League performance. I'd say Moscow was a bit of a, you know, a last minute winner.
Yeah,
Anderlecht, we went and smoked them, and it looked like we'd grown up a bit. And obviously, still relatively early Rodgers era. It's like, all right, we've grown up here and we've got the players that can compete at this level. He didn't score, but he fired a brilliant through ball to Tierney to set up Griffith's goal. Later on, you know, he chips in with the odd goal. You know, I don't think he played every game. I think he was in and out of the team. Maybe I'm wrong. There's a goal that he scores wonderfully against Aberdeen at Celtic Park. I think I was at the game. I think I must have been back in Scotland at the time, because as soon as I saw the goal, I thought that looked familiar. Where he, you know, it's a late, I think it's a 3-0 win, but he goes through one-on-one with the keeper and just puts the keeper on his ass and just walks past him and rolls it in the empty net, which is a uniquely hard thing to do. Not all great Celtic players could or would do that. You know, maybe Larsson, Di Canio. And he did it like as if it was a training game. And that's a memory that stands out. And then ultimately scores a penalty against the Huns at Hampden in the Cup semi-final and scores a goal that on any other day would be the best goal in a Scottish Cup final. But we were going to come to another goal that is better than that later on in this conversation. But yeah, a lovely 25-yard drive that he drills into the side net and against Motherwell. And so ultimately you come out of that season thinking, yeah, this guy's good, he's young, he's got a lot of potential, and like Duncan said, going to make us a lot of money at some point.
So after the Levy and Cham, we've got the top four. All four of the top four are Scottish. Three of the top four came through our youth system. And strangely enough, that none of the top four are the guy who played 55 games and was our top scorer with 18 goals, Scott Sinclair. So, just very quickly, Anthony, with hindsight, how the hell did Scott Sinclair not even make the top 10?
It's not just Sinclair, it's bonkers. You watch back this season, Armstrong, Griffith, Sinclair. Do you know what I mean? If you were asked from your brain to remember the Rodgers era,
mm-hmm,
and who were the clutch players, the contributors, to think that on season two, the double treble, Armstrong, Griffith, Sinclair did not make that list. Obviously, particular Sinclairs you drew attention to. That is mental. And obviously, it's for a reason. You know, Celtic fans aren't morons. You know, we're watching the games, we're paying attention. And I was the guy after Sinclair's first season saying, Sinclair's first season was better than Larsson's first season. Who knows what we're in for here? Obviously, I was betting on the wrong horse there. After that first season,
There's a guy voted in that gives some context to this. Scott, I'll give you his votes. Scott Brown, James Forrest, Olivier Cham, Kieran Tierney, Christopher Ayer. The rest were all much of a muchness. So I wonder if actually, based on that, it wasn't that people were deciding to, getting back to my thoughts earlier about, is it the high standards people set in their first season? I wonder if there was four or five key players that people felt were the reason we won the trophies. And the rest were, not in a bad way, the rest were all on a similar level, but because certain players were, that level was not the peak that had been the previous season, they disproportionately suffered. If you know, did you get my logic?
Yeah.
So, so I'm going to move on to the list. And so number four, Anthony, is Kieran Tierney.
This is where you start to realise how much he'd grown up. You know, looking back at the footage, because you didn't really notice him growing from the day he made his debut to the away Aberdeen games here, where he is a proper grown-up athlete, bombing up and down that wing, setting up goals. And, I mean, I absolutely love Kieran Tierney. I know some fans have some beef with him, but I loved Maloney, I loved McGeady, you know, I loved Birchill briefly. I've loved young Celtic players that have come through, but I don't think I'll ever love anyone as much as I loved Kieran Tierney. As I think I've said in previous podcasts, in the same way that Charlie Nicholas broke my dad's heart by running off to Arsenal, maybe I'll never recover from Tierney leaving, but this is the season where you see him. And again, yeah, I think he missed games. You know, there was injuries and whatnot. He wasn't there every single week. But the big moments, away at Anderlecht, 5-0 against the Huns away at Aberdeen, who, you know, are a decent team. He is there for the big games, getting assists, bombing up and down that line, looking like an athlete, looking like a machine. And right at the start of the season, that goal against Kilmarnock, where he's a young man getting played as captain of Celtic. I think he got played sweeper that day, or centre of a four or whatever. And he just gets bored and says, "Yeah, I'm gonna step out of defence and twat one in the top corner from about 40 metres. And he does it. And just the added benefit of Kurt Broadfoot in the replay looking at him like that bit in Return of the Jedi when Lando Calrissian says, "That shot came from the Death Star." You know, that thing's operational. It's like, yes. Yeah. He just smashed it in from miles away. Get it up, yeah. Oh, absolutely brilliant. I love Kieran Tierney. And maybe I was really pleased to watch the video back and see he was so heavily involved in the 5-0 game. Like I say, should have been a 10-0 game, but he was there for the 5-0 game and he enjoyed every minute of it. And it was wonderful.
Duncan, KT.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think I can even come close. I think we're going to have to get some therapy there for Anthony. He's a way to get his obsessions for one way or another. But I think that this is the season that Tierney became a man for me, and even physically as well. He seemed to go from being quite a sort of slim, scrawny young guy, and suddenly like he rocked up and he's just got so much bigger, his legs, his body, he was so much stronger. And that this is a season where he really did sort of turn into a man for me. And again, just looking at his appearance, he made 55 appearances that season, and he was an absolute machine and genuinely such a good player. So frustrated for him that he hasn't got it going at Arsenal. But that season was really where you think, this guy is the real deal. We all want, we all agree that it's okay buying a player and then punting them on at a profit, but we love seeing players coming through the ranks, and we've been blessed to see a few. But that really is the year where you sit back and you go, aye, do you know what, he really is all that. He is going to play, and he's not going to get some wanky move to like a bottom half team in the Premier League or somebody in the bottom of the French division. That guy's going to go and play for a bigger team, and that's the season that I remember thinking, if anybody's got any doubts about him, then they've gone now, because that is an absolute machine. He's a unit, he's an athlete, he loves the Celtic. You can just see how much he loved being there, and I've got no beef with him leaving Celtic, none whatsoever. He did the right thing, but that season for me, possibly his best season for Celtic.
So top three, and it was close, because basically in people's votes, virtually everybody had the same guy at number one. But the next two were interchanged for a lot of people. Occasionally, I think the odd person had this guy number one and the odd person had number two, but basically the same guy was number one. So number three is Callum McGregor. So Duncan, Callum McGregor.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's not going to come as a surprise to anybody that McGregor's up there in the top three. I mean, again, it's easy to get complacent with a player, and because Callum McGregor plays every week, and again, 55 games that season, he played exactly the same amount as Kieran. But when somebody's a solid 7 or 8 out of 10 every week, it's really easy to just assume they're going to be that and then get the hump when they drop their game. But he is an absolute, like, a performer. He's just such a good player. He's got, imagine his engine on Tom Rogic. I mean, for me, he epitomises everything about a good midfielder. He never gives the ball away. He always takes the ball. He's never frightened to accept the ball in a tight spot. And again, that season, much with Kieran, that's where you suddenly think, and you look at Callum McGregor, oh, he's not got a cool name, and he's no super trendy, and he's no in the media, and you don't see him on social, but he just goes about his business very, very quietly. And every single week that season, and let's face it, every season since, he's a solid 8, if not a 9 out of 10 every week. And he's easy to overlook, but in that team at that time, Absolute joy to watch. And again, that's probably the same season that he sort of became a man and a real absolute nailed on starter. And anybody starting 11, he's, I wouldn't have come on here if he wasn't in the top five.
Anthony?
Just looking through the goals, he chips in. You know, it's those 1-0 goals, 2-0 goals, even 3-0 goals, or, you know, he always chips in with goals every month, one or two, scores massive goals. Obviously, there's goals that you remember forever because they were important. The goal against Bayern was massive for him. Mm-hmm. He scored in the Champions League against Bayern Munich. Obviously, we shit the bed collectively and it doesn't matter much. Same with Zenit St. Petersburg, a game that we, a tie that we botch. But ultimately, when it's go time, when it's the playoffs, plays against the Huns, scores a cracking goal at Hampden in the cup semi. That was the one we discussed in the podcast before. The Rangers bloggers all think, oh, they beat us 4-0 in the cup. We're going to do better next week. We go and beat them 5-0 in the league. And Callum McGregor's there, heavily involved, scoring a lovely goal.
Is that when he passes it into the net?
No, that's the previous season. This is the one with the half volley with his weaker foot.
Yeah.
You know, Tierney had clipped in. That was the one where the Rangers fans had celebrated the draw. How'd that work out, dickheads? And then the Scottish Cup final, Motherwell, a half volley with your weaker foot, 25 yards out, Hampden smashing in off the, you know, the post or the top corner. Just, you couldn't dream of it for any young man. And he did it as if it was just a piece of piss. And I've said before, I saw McGregor play when he was 16. I'd have told anyone that was watching, this guy's a player, and he's gone on to be one of the great Celtic players of my lifetime and this era.
Yeah.
The guy's brilliant.
He's another player that demonstrates sending a young player out on loan can work.
Notts County.
Went to Notts County. This was the season for me that I realised that Callum McGregor, you know, it's a phrase that tends to get used about foreign imports. He's a big game player. He, you know, a bit like we talked about Moussa Dembele. This was the season that I realised that Callum McGregor was a big game player, that he does it on the big occasions for Celtic when we need someone. It's also the season where I was going into one of the European press conferences and it just sounded so odd that as I was going in the tent that we have outside, one of the stewards shouts, Callum, your mum's here for you, because his mum was picking him up. And it just sounded so odd for this, you know, guy that's probably earning £1 million a year, your mum's here, to pick him up. But I think that's because he couldn't drive a car at the time, for reasons of not behaving himself. Anyway, so that Callum McGregor. So we've got two places to go, and in second place in the 2017-2018 season was someone who I don't understand Celtic fans not liking him. He played 50 or been the first one to go to for criticism when he has an off day. This season he's played 58 games, scored 17 goals. It's James Forrest. So Anthony, James Forrest.
I think this was the season where I think understandably questions have been asked about Forrest throughout his career up to a point.
Yeah.
But like I say, with time and a bit of wisdom, you start to identify key contributors, guys that are chipping in, you know, as often as they should. And this is a season where week in, week out, maybe it was the same year before, I'm not sure, but Forrest really, from day one, the goal away at Rosenborg is massive. Not only is it an important goal, it's a brilliant goal,
mm-hmm.
Where he just steals a yard on the right, smashes it in off the bar. Absolutely wonderful goal, you know, progresses us in the Champions League qualification. Does okay in the Champions League. A good assist for the McGregor goal against Bayern Munich on a night where, by all accounts, he played very well and you know, rose up to that level. Not saying he's done that every time in the Champions League, but on that occasion he did, and that's all we want from them. Weeks later, he scores in the League Cup final. Can't complain about that. You know, we get blasé about League Cup final wins and James Forrest scoring in League Cup final wins, but he does it. So no complaints there. Chips in goals throughout the season. And then he scores a hat-trick against Partick Thistle in the Scottish Cup. Nothing to complain about there. Assists and goals all the way through. The question mark will be at that end of that season, but does he do it against the Zombies? Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Turns up for the 5-0 game, scores one of the great goals against that shower of shite, where he just looks at Andy Halliday and says, "You're pish. The guy behind you is pish. And the guy behind him is pish. I'm going to have you all." And he just accelerates through the lot and rattles it in the corner. Again, a key goal in a 5-0 win. And he scored against Rangers since. Ideally, he would have scored more. But he has stepped up to the plate. You know, there's other players out there. Your Simon Donnellys. I loved Simon Donnelly. I thought Simon Donnelly was a good Celtic player. But he never scored against the Huns. And this was...
Do you know, as we're doing the Nine in a Row podcasts with someone you know, Dixie Dean's never scored against Rangers.
Yeah, I heard that.
You know, this is a guy who was scoring like two seasons in a row, scored like 35, 40 goals plus, and he never scored against Rangers. You know, so
it does make a difference. And yeah. The fact that Forrest took that opportunity and you know, he made himself a Celtic legend for me. And maybe that was the moment I gave Forrest carte blanche. That, yeah, maybe 1 week, 2 week, 3 week, he won't score. On the fourth week, he will. He will chip in with a goal. He is a contributor. He's here. He wants to be here. And, yeah, I will fight his corner ever since this, I guess.
And the thing for this, Duncan, was... This was the season where Patrick Roberts started on, you know, him and Forrest were vying on the right-hand side. Roberts gets injured, then gets back fit, and he's kept out of the team by James Forrest. He played 19 games and scored one goal that season, yeah. Patrick Roberts. So James Forrest.
Yeah, I mean, I think Anthony's very eloquently said a lot of the things that I said about James Forrest. Again, I know that where I sit, he gets a lot of stick for the fans around me. That where I sit at Celtic Park, and you think, give the boy a break. And I know wingers never play great in every game. Wingers do tend to come in and out of games, and if you can get every other good game out of a winger, then you're doing well. But again, much as we've said for Tierney and McGregor, there's a guy that's coming through, and he's nearly 58 games in that season and 17 goals, more goals than Dembele, more goals than Edouard. More goals than Griffiths. He's a joy to watch. He looks like an easy guy to manage. He's definitely not appreciated at Celtic. He could end up one of, if not the most decorated cell ever at this rate. He's just, and again, at that time, I don't know if it's a coincidence that he really stepped up when Brendan Rodgers arrived, but the season before he'd had a great season as well under Rodgers, and maybe he did perform better this season and the previous season to this one while he had pressure for Roberts and maybe he needed somebody pushing him to make sure that he was getting his game. But did he earn his place. And now we're talking about the top 10 Celtic players, and like in number 14 to me, you've got Tierney, McGregor and Forrest, three young boys that have been at Celtic since they were Wayne's, and they're rattling up between the three, 170 appearances that season, over 30 goals, an absolute joy. And it's much as it is with Kieran Tierney now, I'd have separation anxiety if James Forrest left. I will only not appreciate James Forrest and maybe even Callum McGregor when they're not playing for Celtic anymore. But at that time, that's again where any question marks for me. Pre-Rodgers, I could see why there was questions on Forrest, but that season and the season before, no, an absolute mainstay, first on the sheet. And he does a lot of work off the ball as well that I don't think a lot of people see. He does make a lot of runs selfishly, but no, that season, absolute quality. Potentially, I think when I've voted for this, I think I had him as my number one player.
So that then leaves us with the number one, and Duncan... It is our captain, our leader. Strangely enough, in his whole time at Celtic, this was his centenary season, it was the only season that he has not scored in a Celtic jersey. And yet he's our number one, Scott Brown. So, Duncan, tell us about Scott Brown that season.
Scott, for me, I'll be honest with you. And players like McGregor and Forrest, I didn't see it early. And when Scott Brown came to Celtic, I was a wee bit disappointed. But in this season here and a couple of seasons before, and again under Rod, especially the season before and this season, for me, and this is where the Scott Brown that we're seeing now, the absolute leader and the warrior, and he is now Mr. Celtic for me, and he has been for the past 3, 4, 5 seasons. But in this season, he just drags us through games. I know he didn't score that season, but he has crept up with some big, big goals for Celtic. But he's the leader of that team that we've just picked. We've just picked the top 10 players there. And I think players like Ncham and Rogic, and they're in that because they're playing around Scott Brown and he's making them look good. But no, an absolute warrior. I think full disclosure, I had him at number 2 when I voted for this, and I had Forrest at 1. But no, he's a marathon. I love watching him, and effort goes a long way for me. He's not the most gifted player. I don't think he pretends to be. But what a shift he puts in, and again, it is an overly used word, but he is genuinely an absolute Celtic legend, and I hope he's got a couple more seasons in him yet and not just one. But in that season, no, if you look up a dictionary for football captain, there's a picture of Scott Brown.
Anthony?
Going back to what I said about Ayer earlier, my notes based on a YouTube video of goals, I've got the word one, Scott Brown, and then a blank space. But even that there, I'm 99.9% sure my vote for Player of the Year that year was Scott Brown. Even though I'm the guy that spent, you know, the first 6 years of Brown's Celtic career asking questions, I'm the guy that's always itching to find his replacement on this podcast because I don't want us to, that go too far and, you know, have him have a shitty end to his Celtic career. But I'm pretty sure I voted for him to be Player of the Year this year, and he was just the leader. He was just the boss. He was just the absolute alpha amongst a team that just ran it up on Scottish football that year. Just, we were the best team in the country by a mile, and he was there every week, being the guy leading the team, like Duncan said about being the definition of a captain. It was only after, this is in hindsight obviously, the League Cup final this season, when I plucked Paul Lambert from my personal all-time Celtic 11, you know, lifetime Celtic 11, and said, I love Paul Lambert. I will never, ever admit that Brown was a better footballer than Paul Lambert, but who is the greatest Celt midfielder of our times is Scott Brown. Whether I like it or not, Scott Brown's the guy, and this is the season, although people forget, his second season at Celtic, he was the Scottish Player of the Year as well. Which is pretty admirable that all these years later he comes back and does it again. Absolutely brilliant. At times I've questioned him, but this season as a leader, as a beating heart of an excellent football team, he is the man.
See your point there about Scott Brown. It's like if I ever find myself in a golf clubhouse, I will go and look and see over the, you know, if golf clubs have got these boards up for their champions over 100 years or whatever. Go and look and see where is the biggest gap that somebody has made the greatest comeback in this club's history of winning the club championship. And then obviously what can throw it is those people who name their kid after themselves and they get the same name. But Scott Brown, to do that and then come back, he must be vying contention for Player of the Year in Scotland this year as well.
100%. Yeah, how many times have been written off, not just by Celtic fans, but that Scott Brown finish, he's a machine. He's an absolute machine, that man. What an athlete. And he's just been, he's in danger of being right up there. When people talk about Celtic players of all time, he's going to be up there.
So the top Celtic Underground top 10 for season 2017-18, the season when we won our seventh of the current nine in a row, was 10th place Dembele, 9th place Edward, 8th Boyata, Rogic, Aya, and Cham, Kieran Tierney, and the top three were Callum McGregor, James Forrest, and Scott Brown. But you don't stop there. We have, and especially named for you, Anthony, the Georgios Tsamaras moment, which is that just that special moment. And I'm going to give everybody the three, and then the two of you can just talk about the three in whatever order you want. They weren't voted in this order. In third place, the Rangers fans and players cheering, getting us in the cup. Second was Callum McGregor's equaliser against Bayern Munich. And in first place, another favourite of yours, Anthony, was Michael Lustig wearing the policeman's hat in the 5-0 game. So, Anthony, you can talk about those three moments in any order you want.
So I'm guessing the Tsamaras Award is the daftness that we appreciate.
Yeah, just that, you know, it's just something that, you know, it's out of the ordinary. It just is something you're not expecting when, just that special moment.
I guess the standout, it has to be Lustig, and the you know, not my favourite, and the Polish hat, because it's just, you know, it's not a 1-0 game, it's not a 2-0 game, it's not a 3-0 game, it's a 5-0 game, and the wind is in our sails, and we are dicking all over Glasgow Rangers, who I hate more than you can imagine, and just to reduce it to that kind of, to lampoon it, just say, all right, I'm going to grab a policeman's hat, stick it on, and, you know, everyone's going to capture it. There's going to be great photographs and video footage of it. I don't know how the policeman reacted. I don't know what the other side of that story is. But, you know, I'm sure it was just handed back and like, all right, fair do, have your hat back, and I'm on my way back to right back. It was, that would be my vote of those three as the best moment.
Notable mentions also should go to Brown celebrating getting fouled at Aberdeen. Was another thing.
I was going to mention that in the Player of the Year vote. I was like, what happened in the last third of that season that escalated the votes? And it's become a classic gif when someone sticks it on him, he pumps his chest. it's just, I'm a dick. Love it. You know, and I do love it. You know. I don't know, maybe I would vote for that before the Polish hat thing, but anyway.
Duncan?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would have, and again, I can't remember what I voted for that, and if Anthony said earlier that Dembele Dink was in that season, then that should have been up there. But I love Mikael Lustig. I absolutely love him. I know he's cost us goals, he's cost us games, but I absolutely love him, and actually surprised he's not in that top 10. When you think Boyata's in there, Lustig played 26 games that season and didn't squeak into the team, but I just loved him, and I actually met him. I've been in his company a couple of times, and for a foreign player, the amount that he loves Celtic, he absolutely loved his time at Celtic and was a great ambassador for the club, and to see that day, which was just a great day, and to see the joy on his face and his reaction and thinking, I'm doing this anyway, I know I'm going to get stick for it, but I don't care. It's a wee bit of a naughty boy about him, and it just summed up the utter dominance that we had then and continue to have over Rangers. It definitely up there for me as being the Tsamaras Award. In fact, I'm going to propose that this gets called the Lustig Award going forward. But
I get my vote for that.
do you know what this podcast is making me realise as well? Gets back to the point, sometimes, you know, just the guy who voted for five players only when we are winning our seventh title in a row, because the season, it followed the invincible season where probably everything didn't seem as good. There is actually an argument for doing the Player of the Year stuff a year later, minimum, all the time, because when you're immediately following it, you're too prejudiced by what you've just gone through of, oh, we should have won that by more. Whereas when we are looking back tonight on the night we secure the ninth title in a row, the seventh is one of the if it wasn't for that season, we wouldn't have a nine in a row. And so you're looking back with much more fondness on it.
Yeah. And that's a season, Brian. That's a season. And you say, have Rangers improved? I think Rangers were third that season.
I
think Aberdeen was second in the 17-18 season. And it is, it's very easy, and it's a good thing you say there. And somebody said earlier, I can't remember which one of you it was, but you tend to look at the last 3 months of what's happened and make a call. And it's, I get frustrated with Celtic fans, especially younger guys that are sort of less than 25, who tend to be the most vocal. And they've just known nothing else other than complete and utter dominance. And the level of frustration they get at, because we draw at Livingston, they're looking for light of heads. And there's a bit of that going on, is that we've taken so much for granted, and certain players and indeed the team over the past few years. And you think back to how shit it was, like back in the 90s and what have you, to be talking about a 9th title, and they talk about a potential quadruple treble, and we must get the chance to finish that, because I've got 400 t-shirts downstairs that says Quadrophenians on them, so we'll need to get them shifted. But as you do look back, and that's what they say with hindsight, it's never around when you need it, but that's you look at those 10 players and then you think that the likes of Lustig and Armstrong and Griffiths and Sinclair didn't make it, and there's a lot of those guys still around. We were and we continue to be in very, very good shape.
The league that season, Celtic played 38, won 24, drew 10, lost 4, 73 goals, 82 points.
We're already on 80 now, with 8 games to go, weren't we?
Yeah. Aberdeen second on 73 points, Rangers third on 70 points, only just finishing third ahead of fourth place Hibs on 67. I mean, like, the Rangers are back nonsense. They just finished above Hibs, managed by Neil Lennon. Shows you, you know, I knew all along he was a great guy.
You're at it, Gilmore. but that's you mentioned there in the Samaras Award, Rangers cheering when they got us in the Scottish Cup. Given how much of a doing we'd given them, given they didn't even finish second in the league and just held on to finish third, and yet they thought they were going to beat us in the Cup. Tell you what.
So transfers in this season, in the summer, Johnny Hayes, you know, in terms of, like, Johnny Hayes, Kendai Benyu, Olivier Ncham, Patrick Roberts, Odson Edward, then in the winter, Marvin Compere, Lewis Morgan, Charlie Musonda, Scott Bain, Jack Hendry, and Leo Matsis?
Never heard of him.
Never heard of him either.
Who does she play for?
He's Australian.
Kudos to Lewis Morgan. He surely drew a title medal for the season, no?
Yeah, because I don't think they... Remember, in the olden days, it used to be you had to play X number of games before you got a medal, whereas I think now you just get a medal if you played, yeah?
Have you played a fair share before Christmas? No?
He did, because he played up front for us.
Yeah. That was a European game that he scored in, but I'm sure he played a couple of other games.
Yeah, did he not play in the League Cup? Did he not start up front in the League Cup final as well?
Yeah, against the Hunt, yeah.
Yeah. Celtic kid Leo Matsis, this is in February of this year. Celtic kid Leo Matsis joins Italian Serie A seaside Triestina on a permanent deal.
I heard
him. The Australian youngster moved from Parkhead to Belconnen United, from Belconnen United in February 2018 after impressing on trial, and he's now signed for some Italian team. Never heard of him. Anyway, Marvin Compere, it just shows you.
That was the season that he played the game, wasn't it?
He played against Morton.
League Cup was about Celtic's lowest attendance ever, I think. I'm not certainly of the season, about 11 or 12,000, yeah. I'm sure I was at that game.
So that's the season 2017-18. So, Anthony, do you think we'll go on to make it 8 in a row?
Fingers crossed.
Well, I think what will happen as we sit here in the summer of 2018 is we'll definitely get eight, and we'll be well on our way till nine. But Rangers will find a way of getting a pandemic or some sort of virus out there that gives them a slight hope that we might get the season abandoned. But I'm sure we'll get it. We'll get nine, and then we'll get ten.
I don't know if actually if you've seen it, by the way. There's the Sun ran a story it was either December or January saying. So it was something like only the end of Western civilization can prevent Liverpool winning the title. with that, I will say, boys, thanks very much and cheers.
Thoroughly enjoyed that. Bye. Thanks, Anthony. Take care, boys.
Hail.
Bring me sunshine in your smile.
So there we go. That was seven in a row. This is nine in a row. That was the Celtic Underground Top 10 from season 2017-18, the second season of Brendan Rodgers, the second treble. We're en route now to a quadruple treble. We've done nine in a row. Hope you enjoyed that. We will have the Nine in a Row Chronicles out shortly, which is celebrating the first nine in a row ever achieved in Scottish football. We will then also have season 2018-19's Top 10, because we didn't do the podcast, although we collected the votes back then. And then you can start voting now for season 2019-20's Player of the Year. It is open to podcasts. That's PODCASTS. podcasts@celticunderground.net. Get those votes coming in. Closing dates for votes were, I don't know, let's make it, where are we? Let's make it sometime at the beginning of June. So we are, I'm making this up as we go along. We're in the middle of May. We can go past the 25th of May. So let's make it, I've no idea what day of the week this is, but let's make it, you've got to get your votes in by midnight on the 10th of June, and then we can do the top 10 well before the season starts. Anyway, enough of me. Hope you enjoyed that. It's magic. We are the nine in a row champions. Who cares what anybody else thinks? We know we're the best team in Scotland. Good night. God bless. Take care. Look after yourself. Sweet love, bring me fun, bring me sunshine.